Hour 2 Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 online, tsn1050.ca. Your home smart speaker and up on TSN 4. Brian Hazio, Doug, Jeff O'Neill, Jamie Noodles McLennan. Our friend Kristen Shilton will join us in about 5 to 10 minutes. Role play level of concern a little bit later on this hour. We're tracking the Jays, and it's not going well. Chicken strips, overcooked, yeah. Dried out, you know, no barbecue sauce.
No sauce.
No sauce. Yeah, chicken strips is getting crushed. And they're down 7-0 halfway through the fifth. It's not a good scene. But this was supposed to be Hyunjin Ryu's start. And obviously he's on the 10-day IL, and we're not sure when he's going to return or what that's going to look like when he returns. Because it's Robbie Ray's staff. I think Barrios is right there. Manoah McGrinan last night. He did not have his stuff. He walked a bunch of guys. But he is, for a kid, he has...
He's got jam.
Presence of mind, yep. And, you know, he's got great makeup. He's got great stuff. Obviously, we know that. We talked about that with Phillips yesterday, the movement on his slider. He can throw mid to high 90s, but it's not going to work out for you every day. You're not going to have your A stuff every day. But the best, find a way to still overcome that and perform through it. And he showed a lot of moxie last night.
That was one of his best performances. I think Buck mentioned it during the broadcast. For him to have it where he didn't have it, that's that's where you got to grind, man. And he grinded it out.
He like was grinding it out.
I just grind it out.
Wow. We haven't had an R.A. Dickey reference in a while.
God, remember that dude where he's like, I got to turn up the heat in the Rogers Center so my knuckleball will float.
Well, yeah, he's like, it's a capricious animal, the knuckleball. I'm like, what are you talking about? People are down there.
He was a deep guy, eh?
Deep thinking R.A. Dickey. And I don't remember if he preferred the roof open or closed. I think it was closed because then it was a controlled environment for the knuckleball. Like, it made a difference. It's like, dude, you're getting paid 20 sheets. You're coming off a Cy Young. They paid a fortune for you. Go out there and pitch. You know, go do your thing. And all right, Dickey, for the most part, actually, his tenure was pretty good. And now that Syndergaard has been so injury-riddled, you don't hear that coming up as much anymore. You know, how could he give up Syndergaard for R.A. Dickey when, you know, Dickey gave him the 200 innings and did his thing? And
I don't remember the last highlight pack I've seen where Thor's been on the mound. I can't even remember. He's out for this year, right?
Just hurt all the time.
Yeah.
You know, he's had so many injury problems, he cannot get his career back on track. I think he might be a free agent after this year. I'm pretty sure Scott Mitchell's written about that and talked about that, that he is a guy that might be available, and maybe the Jays, you know, what goes around comes around. You circle back and talk about reclamation projects. Thor has what it takes to be a stud. He has proven that before, but he's just run into so many injury issues.
Yeah.
But, the capricious nature of the knuckleball. All right, Dickey. He's got to grind it out. And that's what Manoah was doing last night. And you guys can speak to it as – pro athletes, and listen, all walks of life, humans are humans. There are going to be days where you just don't have it. Don't have it. Yet, if you're going that night, you know, if you're a starting pitcher in baseball, you get 33 starts a year. You got to go out there 33 times.
Yeah. My favorite athlete to refer to is Eric Lindros. Like, Eric Lindros' version of not having it, well, maybe his hands weren't good. He didn't operate the power play. Wasn't his dominant self. But I'll tell you what, the greats, they're not having it, they turn it into something at the end of the game a lot of times. Sometimes it's a write-off, sometimes there's rainouts, and it's just not happening. But Eric Lindros, it's just like he'll keep crushing you in the corner, and sometimes his third period, 10 minutes left, he'll crush a guy, turnover, goal, and then he'll score an empty netter. And that's his bad game. That's him not having it, but turning it into something instead of just mailing in the check saying it's not working tonight. So there's always the option. I refer to it as the B game. It's just try to find something to help the team. And the great ones always do something.
Well, he was a unique specimen, though, right? Like, if a skilled guy, if Gretzky didn't have it, which he rarely always had it, but... You know, a guy like Lindros could just dominate the game physically and get mad. Like, he would be mad and say, okay, I'm just going to run a few people through the boards. You know, Ginla's like that, Shanahan, you know, some power forwards. They would want to be difference makers if they didn't have it that night, you know, with the hands.
Get into a fight or something. That's the physical nature
of the sport. Anything.
Yeah. And that is it is unique to that. Where if it's not a physical sport, right, and you're just drained, you know, if you're a baseball player, if you're a basketball player, even if you're a hockey player and you're a skill player, and you're expected to bring it with your pace and, you know, your penalty killing, whatever it is, and you're not feeling it that night. That
sometimes
happens.
You don't have it, man.
Sometimes you don't have it.
Yeah, you're the best at what you do at this particular job. Sometimes you're junk.
Thank you. Yes, that is a fact. That is true. And you know, those are the ones you get paid for. The ones you got to grind out, where you just got to grind it out.
That's right.
It's 3:55, and you're like, I'm not in a mood to talk for 3 hours, but we got to talk for 3 hours.
you
got to get going here.
You were fine. Like I was concerned. Let's just paint a picture. It doesn't go well for the Jays on Monday night, and your Green Bay throws up a stinker against Detroit instead of coming back, and Rodgers is a disaster. You would have been in a mood.
Yes, that would have been worthy of a bad mood. And I've tried to, you know, I've tried to mellow out over the years, which I actually think I have. And I know it's impossible for you guys to really pick up on that because we haven't been in studio for the better part of 20 months. Right. But
remember, you had to adopt the philosophy, like, don't sweat the small stuff. Like, little things would, like, take you off the tracks for the whole show.
Well, when we used to do the lunch and we were so focused on the Leafs, and we still talk a ton of Leafs here, we were very focused on them. But when it was, like, our primary objective, and they were terrible at that point, you know, or throwing away leads or whatever, I'd come in and be like, I can't believe this team. Like, I'd be so angry.
You'd be
some
so
days.
Mad.
So, what about you guys knew
stretch?
It was coming.
What about the stretch where they went with, like, 20 games left and like, Phil and his line, they weren't even trying. I remember saying they're not even trying.
That was the Horacek year.
That was when it was we're
that
done.
That was where it was like, this is disgusting.
But that wasn't as bad as it was the year before when they were 9 points in with 15 games to go and they missed by 9 points.
Right.
That was the most crushing experience because you're watching
them. I don't even remember. Like, I remember being on a show with you, but I don't remember what we said. Oh, like, I can't remember those
I'm sure
days.
It wasn't
like,
very overly optimistic or...
No, but
you know, it would have been critical and deservedly so, the way they were playing and performing. Like, you away opportunities like that, you're going to take some heat.
How about this? Yesterday, we're doing a pre-tape and things don't go well. If you were in studio 6 years ago and that happened, you would have gone through the window. You wouldn't have had to gone through the door to go and see the grappler or whoever set that up. You would have gone right through the window.
It would have thrown
me
off.
So you have mellowed. You have mellowed.
I have mellowed, and listen, it's all good. We laugh about it now, and we move on with the show.
Exactly.
And that's maturity. That's professionalism.
Love it.
And that's what we're all trying to get to. That was the theme of the Leaf pressers today, maturity and learning from mistakes and not forgetting about them, embracing the pressure and trying to utilize it in your favor this upcoming season.
Yeah. That's
and,
fair.
You know, I saw Mike Kelly, our buddy Mike Kelly, doing a breakdown of the Leafs. Really interesting stuff on Twitter and we talked about this countless times during the playoff runs, and we've done it seems like every year for the past 5 years. But it was more in your face this past season or this past spring against Montreal, is their lack of ability to adjust to playoff hockey in the playoffs. Their philosophy of holding onto the puck and making plays, which is a Keith and Dubas philosophy. Like, those two go to the well with that. Don't just chip and chase. Don't throw it up the glass and don't live for another day. Mike Kelly did a great breakdown of this how it burned them so badly. We remember the turnover. Yeah, the Marner turnover in Game 7. And it's a perfect example where you had to get too cute. You had to make plays. You know, don't live to see another day. And the thing is, that doesn't have to apply during the regular season because the regular season style of play is drastically different. Yeah. You know, you can get away with that. But come playoff time, they have to make that adaptation. It's not it's not killer instinct necessarily. It's not, you know, what line matchups are there going to be. It's about adjusting to the style of play, which they have not been able to do. And they did not do against Montreal. And it burned them. Like, the margin of error is so slim. And
agreed.
The truth is, we won't find that answer out until April, you know, if they punch their ticket and get back to the playoffs. So Dubas was speaking today. The players were speaking today. Sheldon Keefe was speaking today. And the media was in attendance, including Kristen Schilten, our TSM Maple Leaf reporter. She was down there at the rink this morning, and she joins us now on the Maple Toyota Hotline. What was that experience like, Kristen, being in person, seeing people again, interacting?
It was actually kind of strange just to have people right in front of you and talking face-to-face to players. It had been so long since we've been in that format, and the Leafs actually have a brand-new socially distant space for us inside, and there's chairs and carpeting, and we're not freezing in the rink. So it has a nice bonus to it this year. Not only are we in person, at least not scrumming, but we actually have a nice room to sit in that's warm and quite different from what we're used to. So it was a very nice experience today.
Kristen, a lot of talk, and Brian was mentioning it earlier, there's a lot of question marks for this question going into the season, whether it be left wing, the loss of Hyman, Morgan Riley. But it seemed like the questions went back to the collapse last year. Did you sense any frustration from the guys, like, are we really doing this, or why are we doing this, or any kind of frustration?
You know, there was so much frustration, I felt like, when the season ended, that now it seems like the resolve is there. Like, they've just really decided, we're not going to play into this narrative anymore. Like, we're really just going to say it's a clean slate, it's a fresh start. Yes, we remember how frustrating it was, but we're not in that place anymore. We're a different group. We have licked our wounds, and we're coming back, and we're going to be better than ever. And so I didn't get that same feeling like it was still really gnawing at anyone the way that I think it has been in months past and in interviews past. But that may have been a conscious choice on the players' part, just to try and convey a sense of confidence instead of, you know, just continuing to kind of be kicked around, for lack of a better term, about their inability to get things done when it matters most. And I thought Sheldon Keefe might have been the only one who still kind of seemed a little bit like, you know, he was defiant as well in terms of why they'll be different this year, but there was still that, maybe it was still a little bit of a sting there for him in how last year ended. But I really did feel like everyone's kind of turned the page at this point.
Kristen, is there, you know, one or two guys that you've kind of circled to focus on at camp that, you know, isn't front and center for us? You know, I know there's changes, obviously, with Richie and Bunting, but maybe guys on PTOs, whether it's Hosang or Gusev, that you'll be a little extra focused on to see if they can push through and find a spot on this team?
Yeah, you know, I am very intrigued by Vinicius Gusev PTO. It just seemed like it was just an interesting choice for the Leafs, just given his history and what he might have to offer. I was surprised by that. I'm curious to see how they're going to use him, how he'll be deployed, especially in the early goings of camp, where Keith said it's about opportunity. It's about putting players in these situations where he wants to see if they sink or swim. Are they going to thrive in the types of roles that the Leafs need filled? So he's definitely one for me. I'm interested to see what David Camp does. I think he's a big body, somebody who could potentially fill a bit of a need that the Leafs have for some of that, not physicality, but just a presence. You know, like, they don't have a lot of those guys that can kind of stand you up and really make a difference in terms of that presence. And, you know, killer instinct isn't only a mentality. It's also just about how are you projecting yourself as a team. And they're not necessarily the biggest group. So he's intriguing to me as well. And then, you know, I think Erasmus Sandin, Travis Dermott, I don't know how much we're going to talk about them in the third pairing, but that's a crucial situation to me, because you lose Zach Bogosian from that group. What kind of, you know, effect is that going to have on that third pair? What does that mean for Sandin and for Dermott, both of them with a lot to prove, I think? So those are kind of what I'm looking at. The left wing situation, they have enough options that I think that they'll find something that'll work. And I don't think necessarily what they start with will be what we see all throughout the year. I think there's going to be a lot of tinkering. Keith loves to tinker. So in that sort of matchup, I'm not sure that we're going to see something, you know, in camp that comes out and you know, is what they keep for 82 games.
Well, Kristen Schilten, our Maple Leaf reporter, the Leafs back in camp today, back on the ice tomorrow. And John Tavares speaking today. He'll be back on the ice tomorrow. And he gave a very positive rundown of his experience last year against Montreal. Obviously, it wasn't a positive event when he got hit by Corey Perry. Doesn't remember the actual situation, but said once he got out of hospital, no symptoms, felt okay, was back in the gym really quickly. And based on what I heard today, and you were in there with him, Kristen, I don't have any reason to believe that there will be any carryover. Sounds as if John is at 100%.
Yeah, absolutely it did. And isn't that just, it's kind of incredible. I mean, I remember just, and we all saw it, obviously, and being in the building and the hush that fell over and just how that moment just stuck in your mind all through the last couple of months, just of how scary it was. And then to see him today, and he's fine. He said he was back on the bike 3-4 days after it happened. He was skating. We saw him skating. And he felt good. He said that there wasn't some, you know, people seem to think that there was it was a lot more obvious. But he really said that it wasn't, that it was he was able to get some rest and was feeling pretty good after some initial exhaustion coming out of the hospital. But that's a really good, you know, not just for Tavares personally, but for the Leafs. I mean, if you don't know about Austin Matthews' status necessarily, although that sounds positive, your center depth is just, it's really crucial for any team. But especially when you're trying out these new wingers, you're trying to work in some new players, you just know that having Tavares at 100% health is going to make a huge difference. And there's no one who's going to be more motivated to turn this thing around and to see the Leafs have success than him. And they're going to really need to lean on him, especially if they're trying to figure out kind of how this the center depth is going to be for the start of the year and throughout camp as well. So. Really positive news, and I can't believe that with how that whole sequence played out for him on the ice in May, that, you know, he was able to rebound so quickly and be 100% now.
Well, they're on the ice tomorrow. Hockey is back, and you will be down there covering it on a daily basis. So we look forward to all the coverage, and we'll do this again soon. Thank you, Kristen. There's Kristen Schiltner, TSN Maple Leaf reporter, joining us here on the Maple Toyota Hotline. It's time through Toyota. Discover your next Toyota hybrid at Maple Toyota. Come see why Maple Toyota is the best place to get yours. Visit Maple Toyota right next to Wonderland. Yeah, that was great to hear from Tavares. And yeah. I guess when you look back on it now, makes sense as to why he was in the building as quickly as he was. Remember, he was back in the building for Game 7, and they came out and said that he had tweaked his knee, which I don't think came up today. I didn't hear that part of it anyway, but there's no reason to believe, again, that he's anything but 100%. But looking back on it now, if they got through the Habs, there clearly was a chance Tavares was going to return. Like, yeah. Maybe not the next series, but if they got through to the conference final, I think he would have been playing based on what he said today, that
Don't
he felt fine.
Don't even bring it up. Don't even bring it up, buddy. They'll just, if you look at that path that they were given last year and that opportunity, man. Scary. Like, it's just never coming around again. There'll never be another North Division. It's scary to think that him coming back to the next opponent. And I know, you know, Montreal got by Winnipeg. Who knows what would have played out, but that path ain't coming around too often.
No, they got to go back and earn it here. But you can always play the what-if game. As long as he's healthy this year, that's the biggest challenge because yeah. – You know, they're going to need him. They're going to need, you know, everyone, all hands on deck here. Like I wanted to bring that up to Kristen just to see because it's interesting for me. Like, Gusev, I don't mind him as a player. I've watched him play a lot, and I think he's a decent, he's small. I think he's like 5'8 or 5'9, like a little guy. But, you know, he's got some skill. And Hosang, I don't know. I'm
not holding
that
my
guy's
breath.
That guy's had nine lives,
saying.
Man.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
You know what I mean? Like, he's a skilled guy, but I think I know they're early on in his career, some maturity issues in that, but eventually, like, you know, all these organizations, they're not all, like, lying. You know, they're not all against you. Like, eventually you got to own the hell you've done.
And worth a shot. PTO, yeah. It doesn't, you know, he sticks around for a week and they move on, then so be it. Like, I don't right. have an issue with giving it a shot, but I'm not penciling him in. I don't see him making the team. Maybe they lock him in on a two-way deal, and he's a guy that they pull the Galchenyuk maneuver with.
No kidding.
Send him to the
Marlies. Scary as hell.
Give him 2 months down there, and then maybe call him up at some point. Because injuries are going to pop up, and you look at what they have up front. I don't know who's stepping in. you know, if you have to go 2, 3, 4 injuries deep, it gets thin. Like Adam Brooks is a guy that will play. He may make the team as the fourth line center. Like I kind of get the impression like they
like him.
Yeah, and he's matured now. What is he, 23 or 24? Nick Robertson, if he's on the team, then clearly he would take up a spot. If he's not, he's a guy that maybe you can call up. But that's an issue for a lot of teams in the cap era, clearly. It's not like the Leafs are alone. But when you're so top-heavy the way that they are, the rest of your lineup, there's only so much you can expect.
Yeah, I mean, Brooks is a guy that'll challenge. Like, Kampf hasn't been talked about at all, but he's a solid player.
He's playing.
And they expect that he's playing. So that isn't that your fourth line center, or is that your third line center if you push Kerfoot over?
I think that's a legitimate discussion if Kerfoot plays second line left wing with Tavares and Nylander. I wouldn't be surprised if he moves around over the course of the season. I think ideally you'd have Kampf on the fourth line and Kerfoot probably on the third line, but if you can't find somebody to connect with Tavares and Nylander or Matthews and Nylander or Ed Marner, and you're searching it out, you know that those lines are going to play 20-plus minutes a night.
Right.
That's something that Sheldon Keefe is going to have to determine. What's more important, left winger on your top two lines or your third line center?
Well, and the other thing that I'm looking at, too, is you mentioned it. Like, they have 6 NHL defensemen. Really, and that's including Sandin. Am I missing somebody here?
Like, no, you're not.
Alex Biega was signed for the minors, I believe. Like, I don't see him as a guy who – Carl Dahlstrom, just looking at their roster.
They signed the guy out of the KHL who started his career in Minnesota, I think it was, and I'm forgetting his name.
Rubens?
But, no, it's like Grinnell or something like that. I'm not trying to be disrespectful. I can't remember his name. But they do it every single year. They bring someone over from the K. He's a 25-year-old, 26-year-old, and he's going to be in camp. And they'll give him a crack, and I don't know if he's going to make the team as the seventh defenseman or not. But, yeah, I think that's a legitimate conversation, as I said earlier this afternoon.
No,
like, is Sandin just gifted 15 minutes a night for 82 games? I don't know.
I think if anything, like Liljegren, is they're going to give him a good hard look as the seventh. Then
how many years is that guy going to be referred to as a prospect? I don't know. He seems like a nice kid, whatever. But it's like, don't you got to play sooner? What year? Somebody tell me. Like, what year is this in the organization for this guy? It's got to be Liljegren. 5.
Yeah, he'd be 22 probably now. Like, I think, and he stepped right in with the Marlies when he was 18. So,
he's 22.
He's 22. I think he was drafted the year before Sandin. I believe, maybe 2 years before Sandin.
Yeah.
But
I know the guy you're talking about.
22 is not that bad. I was thinking like it was a lot worse. It just seems like he's been around forever.
Well, he has. I mean, he's been around the team, too. It's Brennan Minnell.
Minnell,
yes. From Woodbury, Minnesota, but he played in the KHL last year.
Yes.
So,
and he's 24, I believe.
Yeah, 97 birth date. Yeah. So, you know, you're right. Like, maybe he gets a sniff or whatever. But, like, it wouldn't surprise me if they were also sniffing around at waiver time to grab a 7th D or somebody off of a team.
No, you're right, though. It turns into a scene from Major League early in the movie. Like, when you get past the big boys, it's the grounds crew's like, who the hell is this guy?
Hazy, I know you don't want to have Joe from the Bridge on the show, but maybe we give Joe from the Bridge a chance to post his opening day starting lineup, and we'd kind of talk back and forth. We discuss it. Do we give him a chance?
We could, but what does that achieve? We're breaking down Joe from the Bridge's lineup. What does that look like?
Maybe we'll see where Joe from the Bridge's head is at as far as bunting. Where is he playing? Who's the first line left winger? Just mixing and matching. Get a feel for where Joe from the Bridge's head is at.
Okay.
I don't know.
Yeah, hey, listen, if he wants to mock it up, which I'm sure he will do by the end of the hour.
He has it on his phone probably already.
Well, and he controls the screen, too. He could get it up. He could mock something up, put it up on TSN4. Right, he's probably got it in the chamber.
Exactly.
And he's just waiting for us to bring this up. I wouldn't be surprised if Joe from the Bridge has his own lineup. Like, the whole, it's all built. It's a board that's been built for 2 weeks.
Like a Steve Dryden lineup board.
Yes.
And it's just Joe from the Bridge, Maple Leafs opening day roster.
Mocking it up. Yep, I could see that as well. Yeah, we could, I guess we could do that. I don't know. We're breaking down Joe from the Bridges mock
I just,
lineup for night one.
I know he's so fired up for Leafs starting. Maybe, I don't know. Just an idea.
Okay.
If he doesn't
he
have
it ready,
he also
might
we'll
be
go.
Concerned, though. Like, that's the thing. He's a positive guy, but maybe what's his level of concern? Because he might have some legit concerns on some of the moving parts, right?
Like, the, it's the not depth just... of this team is a legitimate debate. Are they going to be good enough? You know, like, you look at the big four up front, their top four defensemen, and I think their goaltending tandem is good enough.
It,
like,
sure
yes, it's
is.
Not Vasilevsky, it's not Hellebuck, but it's a good tandem. Like, it can, yeah. I think it can work. I'm not overly concerned about the goaltending. So top four goaltending, you're like, well, that'll work. Like, that's a good lineup. And I think Sheldon Keefe's a good coach. It's what do you do with the other eight forwards? And I would include Kerfoot as, like, a legitimate good NHL player. So, you know, you got seven guys, and then it's a lot of question marks. What is McKayev going to be? What will Spezza be in year three up here? What is Simmons, you know, coming off a second-half injury issues and couldn't find his footing again? What does the second pairing look like? There's, you know, legitimate debates, and
right. We
won't have those answers until it all plays out. Role play level of concern. We haven't played role play in a long time.
I'm going to get just stiffed with something stupid. I know it.
No, it's all legitimate sports topics. We wouldn't possibly do that. It's all good. Role play level of concern coming up. MJ will join us later this afternoon. Scott Mitchell, who's tracking the Jays. They're not in a good spot down at the Trop right now. Chicken Strips got rocked, and they're losing 7-1. It's not a good scene for the Jays. But we'll track it. We'll get into it later this afternoon. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on TSN 4.
You can never, never ask me to stop drinking. Do you understand?
I do. I really do.
All right, here we go. Role play level of concern. It has been quite some time since we played this game. It's one of our favorites. Wednesday afternoons around 5:30. Maybe Jerry shows up. Maybe Al's brother with the filter. Maybe a little Nick Cage role play level of concern. And
yeah. This
is what we're going to do today. So the way this works is we go around the table, and each one of us will represent one person or thing or situation. And then we have to hand out our level of concern. Is it a pint on the patio, which would suggest no concern whatsoever? Maybe a six-pack and a shot or two. Moderate concern. Or Nick Cage in leaving Las Vegas, which is
just
a nuclear option when it comes to concern, all right? So, we'll start with you. News out of Chicago today, Andy Dalton will not be playing this weekend. That means Justin Fields is the starter. Justin Fields will get his first official start as the quarterback of the Chicago Bears. Oh, you are Andy Dalton.
Oh,
level
God.
Of concern, your starting job is officially gone
play
in
it.
Chicago.
You can never... Never ask me to stop drinking.
The head coach got a gift here because it seemed like he was reluctant and he actually knew that Fields was the guy. The game in Los Angeles, they were going back and forth and it wasn't some kind of effective platoon. It seemed like he didn't know what to do because he knew the kid was ready to take over, and now he's been handed a gift. It's going to be the kid, and he's going to lead the team and be better than Andy Dalton, which should have happened to begin with because they're garbage basically anyway. So Andy Dalton's out of a starting position in Chicago. There's not even a question about it.
Well, unless Fields is terrible like Tua was last year, right, where Fitzpatrick had to go back in because Tua couldn't handle things. But Miami felt like they were a pretty good team, where I don't think Chicago should feel that way. What I find inconsistent here is if you're not going to start Fields because you don't believe in that developmental decision, then shouldn't you find someone else to start this week because you don't want to force feed him? Like, that was the whole point. So an injury means, all right, now we can force feed you. Like, isn't this about 5 years down the road with Fields, 10 years and building him up? Why should an injury to Andy Dalton affect his starting status? Where if he was going to go in based on injury, then play him in week one if he's better. Like, if you're going to play him as a starter because Dalton's injured, it has nothing to do with his development or shielding him because Dalton could go down any second and then all of a sudden he's the guy.
I just didn't – it's almost like this Dalton was getting this treatment like he was some legendary Bears figure where he was owed – this respect and this starting opportunity where if Chicago wasn't going after Andy Dalton, how many other and I think they paid him something significant too.
Decent amount of money, yeah.
It was like $10 million or something stupid. Mm-hmm. And like, but why was there so much commitment to him? It's like Adam Gase's brother, Nagy. I don't know what the hell happened, but he was handed a gift that he got hurt, and now it's the kid's job.
Okay. All right. Well, there you go. Justin Fields. We'll see what he's got this weekend. I'm looking forward to tracking that. Noodles, you are Vancouver Canuck fans. Always stable, always reasonable, very rarely emotional. So you're going to represent the Canucks fan base. Level of concern, the unsigned players, Patterson and Hughes, will have a negative effect on the start of the season.
I want to say play it, but I don't know if you heard Jimmy Benning's comments today. He's like, yeah, I'm going to finish this interview up and give the agents a call. We'll get something done. Like, he just, it's so casual. Like, I don't know, maybe he was playing coy that he has something in the bag or whatever. I'm not Nick Cage, but I'm not a pine on the patio. Like, I am a dozen beer and three shots of Sambuca. That's what I am.
That's not Nick Cage, but it is close. That's Nick Cage.
That's a casual afternoon watching baseball in a pub.
Well,
that is,
I do wonder.
That was
if,
me watching Jerry Bettman announce the season canceled.
Right, and then you became Nick Cage.
Yeah,
but it wasn't about concern.
It's somewhere
it was about
in the
celebration.
Middle. I don't know what it is, but it's somewhere in the middle. Put it that way.
I do wonder if these GMs are, they're like a duck on water. Jimmy Benning up top is just cool, calm, and collected, and underneath his wheels are pedaling because he's got to get two guys signed. I saw Dorion say the same thing in Ottawa. He's like, well, we'll get it done. Figure it out. It's all good. He's like, well, okay, Brady Tkachuk, pretty big piece. You know, like, as you're trying to work that out, Dorion and company are also saying, we're done with the rebuild. It's time to get cooking here. Well,
right.
If you're going to get cooking, man, you better have Brady Tkachuk in the lineup. Like, he's a prominent player on your team. So publicly, it's probably in their best interest. Like, Jim Bennett can't come out and be like, I'm screwed. I got nothing here. These guys are going to take me to the woodshed. Of course, he's not going to say that, but it's got to be a little bit of concern, I would think. But all right, you're middle of the pack. It's all good.
Yeah.
I am playing the role of Hyunjin Ryu. Level of concern, you've made your final start of the season for the Jays. Play it.
You can never, ever ask me to stop drinking.
That's a low and down and dirty one right there.
It is, but
tough.
Listen, he's on the 10-day IL, which can be retroactive to his last start. He very well could come off and pitch, but if they set up the rotation where you've got Ray, Barrios, Manoa, Mats has been statistically better than Ryu. Ryu is going to get a start because they're committed to him. He is who he is. They paid him what they paid him. But there's no guarantees he comes off the IL when he's supposed to or when he can.
Right.
And if you get into the playoffs and it's a five game series in the ALDS and maybe a three-man rotation, I'm not sure he's pitching that anyway. Mm-hmm. Like, it may not even be as much about the injury as it is about the math. Like, if you get into a five-game series where you need three, you know, maybe four starters, maybe Ryu's there for your fourth, but I think if all is even – and he comes off the IL, I think you go on Ray, Barrios, and Manoa.
Isn't that crazy to start to even talk like that? We talked for weeks before leading up to spring training.
And he was
mad.
We were talking about
Ryu and then scrap metal to the side.
That's right.
It's pick and choose of what happens. The kid Manoa, what can happen with him? And now it's completely shifted. That's quite a transformation as far as that pitching staff.
It's so true.
Really
that was
is.
The whole conversation. We had Shapiro on, Atkins on. We're like, so you got Ryu. That's awesome. But what's going on
here? What's
going
to happen after that?
Yeah. Like, who's chicken strips and what's he going to bring to the table? And Tanner Roark was in camp. You know, like,
chicken
it's
strips.
That's how bad it
Dude,
was.
Dude, is that guy still playing bay? There's no way.
No, Roark is he got claimed and – I haven't tracked him since they got rid of him. I don't know where Roark is at, but he's got, what did he make, $10 million cash this year. I think it was $14 million last year. Or maybe it averaged out to $14 million per. Anyway, he's still making a lot of change. So, you know, shout out to Tanner Roark and whatever body part is getting lit up tonight. okay, moving on here. Oh, you are playing the role of John Rahm of Team Europe. Level of concern, you have to carry Team Europe at the Ryder Cup this week.
Zero. Not even a stitch of booze, not even a pint on the patio, because I am with some gentlemen, and let me name some of them. Sergio Garcia, Lee Westwood, Ian Poulter. Come Ryder Cup time, these guys turn into 2001 Tiger Woods, and they start putting from everywhere, and they just dominate. I am not concerned whatsoever. And we always, there's no such thing as a lead dog in the Ryder Cup. You got to be a partner with some guy, and it's just not about the best of the best. We've seen it for years with Tiger Woods, was by far the best golfer in the universe, and he didn't do squat at Ryder Cups. His individual record's garbage, never played well, had a difficult time finding a partner for him. So it's irrelevant for Jon Rahm being the best player in the world or rank that, because it's a team and the European players understand that.
Yeah, I think that's appropriate. I think you said it well. I mean, I guess the thought process behind that level of concern is everyone is saying, you know, 8 or 9 of the most talented players are American. The one guy that sticks out is Rahm, and McIlroy would be number 2.
Dude, what the hell have they been saying for years with those teams?
No, I know, but it doesn't mean it's untrue. Like, you get past Rahm and McIlroy, you're how many Americans are you going through before you touch a guy on Team Europe where you'd say that guy's as good?
And every year the Ryder Cup comes up, you say to yourself, you look at the roster of American players, you say, if they play quality golf, they should win, but they never get around to it. Right. They get dummied. They get dummied, man.
They've lost 4 of the last 5. So we'll see. Whistling Straits, man, it looks windy. It looks good. It's a beautiful course. Noodles, you are playing the role of Jack Eichel.
Ooh.
Level of concern, this trade you're hoping for is simply not going to happen this season.
Play it.
You can never, never ask me to stop drinking.
Wow.
It just, for me... We talked about this the other day. Like, what are they doing there? Like,
I don't know.
I know they're looking for the, I know what they're looking for, the best return for him. But do you think in the back of their minds, like, we know that no matter what we trade for or who we trade for, it's not going to be Jack Eichel. So we're going to lose the trade. And now we've weakened our organization even more. In the back of their minds, are they sitting there going, can we repair this relationship? Can we do anything to make Jack Eichel still the face of our franchise? Like,
I don't see it.
But you
got to
sort that out.
What does that conversation sound like?
Training camp. I don't know. I don't know how that unfolds. Like, there's certainly a medical difference of opinion, but
yeah, where is that going? Like with surgery and
I don't
rehab
know.
That's the thing.
You trade for the guy, and what does the guy go? You're like, I got you. And he's like, I want to go for surgery now.
I have to have surgery and I'm out for 4 months. Yeah.
Right.
It's not quite like the Ben Simmons situation with Philly, because to my knowledge, like, is Eichel showing up? I don't believe he said he's just not going to be there. Simmons has said he's not going to be there in Philly. And I saw Doc Rivers today claiming, you know, he wants to get the band back together and he wants to bring Simmons back into the fold and make it work. I don't buy that for a second, and I don't believe that Doc Rivers really wants that. I think that's right. Management saying, you better go do this because we got to get more value than John Wall or you know, Andrew Wiggins, which is what we're talking about. Although I don't know if he deserves much more than that. Ben Simmons is not a guy that I would be actively pursuing.
I mean, the guy makes $30 million plus, and he's supposed to be this mega star, and he can't shoot.
Literally doesn't shoot.
Yeah. So how bad do you need that the way the game is played right now?
Yeah.
I don't either, dude.
I'm not. No, but I think Doc Rivers is like, we got to make it, you know, let's get him in here, boost his value. I wonder if that could be the case in Buffalo. I just don't know if Eichel will be going down that road. But I'm with you, Noodles, in terms of everything that's hanging over them. I don't know how you deal them in camp now, or at the, it's not a trade deadline deal. It seems like too big of a deal, too complicated.
Yep. No, I think it is. It's a really, really unique situation that's not good. And the longer it goes, the more question marks and the more distracting it is.
Yep. Well, absolutely. And yet they could probably use the distraction, because what else are people paying attention to down in Buffalo other than Jack Eichel? Final one here. I am playing the role of 0-2 teams in the National Football League. Level of concern, one of you will finish 0-17 on the season. Pint on patio.
More.
No, it's not. It's not. Do you know how tough it is, how awful you have to be to go 0-17? For starters, no one's ever done it before because we've never had a 17-game season. There are currently only, I believe, 7 teams: Detroit, Minnesota, Jacksonville, Atlanta, the Jets, the Colts, the Giants, who are currently undefeated or have not won a game, are all at 0-2. No one's going 0-17. Last year we were convinced the Jets were going to do it, and they won a ball game. Jacksonville won a ball game last year. It's going to happen. Teams are going to get one win. I could see 1-16 for a couple of these teams. That is a possibility. But 0-17, pine on the patio this early. Talk to me again in 10 weeks.
Right.
You know, but you can't have that type of mentality. It's so tough to win a ball game. So tough. The Jets, yeah.
Dude,
the Jets were talking
like
a big game, too.
So bad. Oh,
they're
my
so bad.
God.
So bad. But, you know, Atlanta's bad. Minnesota's going to win ball games. They're going to win games.
Who's the butt fumble guy again? What was his
Mark
name?
Mark Sanchez.
What's that guy up to?
I think he's doing TV. I think he's – is he doing college stuff,
like
I believe, for ESPN
or Fox?
He's
not playing anymore.
No,
he's done.
Yeah,
he's an analyst. He's an analyst.
He's
ESPN.
An analyst.
Oh, good for him.
Yeah, he actually had a great start to his career when you consider it was the Jets and how bad they were.
Yeah,
right.
Fifth overall. He didn't have a lot of college experience. He only, I think, started like 11 or 12 games in college. And they went to back-to-back AFC Championship games. Like when you consider the history of the Jets, that was a bright spot.
Yeah.
And he was at the front of it. But the butt fumble, that was the beginning of the end. For him, yes. For Rex Ryan, the Jets, they've sucked ever since. Butt fumble was the end of the road.
Yeah.
So there it is, role play level of concern. No
Love
funny
it.
Business, just all in the up and up. Everyone's taking this very seriously. Very serious game that we like to play.
Well, usually at the end, you like, oh, dog, you are your belt buckle. Are you – what is your level of concern of exploding before
– You can never, never ask me to stop drinking.
Thanks, Smalls.
Your level of concern with the when the bulk barn was closed – or never closed, though, right, during COVID?
Yeah.
That's the question. Were you on the – were you, like, pounding on the door like a scene and
– Just driving by, seeing if you're open. You're literally the cable guy to the bulk barn.
Romeo and Juliet.
Sure.
I'll say one last thing about the bulk barn episodes. There may have been some running of red lights to get there before she closed a few times to get the jelly tots.
That's desperate, man.
Dude,
that's
it
a
was,
jump.
I'm telling you, it was a bad routine. My wife would just look at me and be like, you're bringing it up to bed like a giant white bowl of like this bowl right here. That bowl was locked and loaded, full to the brim of jelly beans, jelly tots, and gummy bears.
Dude, you're lucky you got those new jibs. You're lucky you got those new jibs.
Yeah.
That's so much sugar.
Your teeth would be black.
Dude, it's outrageous. It's outrageous.
That's a habit you got to kick. Like, that's – you're probably sweating trying to kick that habit. Like – legitimately,
you don't start being stupid about it. I had to, but I did have to honestly say that's
don't start being stupid.
I just said that's enough. Like okay. I called my trainer and I threw out all the candy, and I just said that's enough.
All right, well there you go.
Love
new
it.
Era. Shout out. End of an era. Bulk barn. Still love you. Mike Johnson still to come. Scott Mitchell on the Jays still to come. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on TSN 4. All right, Scott Mitchell, our Jays reporter, Mike Johnson coming up in the final hour. Look ahead to week 3 in the NFL as well, where you guys, yourself and Al's brother, are going to have the pick for tomorrow night. And it's Houston at home against Carolina. Carolina's 2-0, Houston 1-1. They are down Tyrod Taylor at quarterback. They have a guy playing quarterback who I am not that familiar with. The line is moving in the wrong direction because Carolina is now up to an 8-point favorite. And I don't think there's going to be a lot of detail in your pick. I'm assuming you're taking Carolina. You don't have to make that announcement right now, but I'd be shocked if you went other way.
Let's just say I played 10 years in Carolina.
Yes.
I know a bunch of people with that team, and I know some inside stuff that will be revealed tomorrow.
So there will be in-depth analysis behind your pick.
You don't think I call people down there in Carolina? Come on.
Oh, I'm sure you do. So your boy Sam Darnold, there's no ghosts down in Carolina? Is that what you're telling me? Is that the info you have? No
Let's
ghosts.
Let's just say I'm to believe, I can't confirm or deny that ghosts are a thing of the past.
Okay, I like that. Well, listen, that was an impressive win by them against New Orleans last week. Really impressive win. So we'll get to that more coming up in the final hour, including a new collaboration, the Leafs and Bieber's clothing line working together. You saw this one coming. It worked too well for the Raptors. The Leafs need their Drake, and it sounds like it could be Justin Bieber. We'll tell you about that in the final hour. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on the TSN app.